This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I was thinking about that, Adrian. When did we start the first podcast? Do you know the date?
Yeah, sort of.
Just the year is enough for me.
I think it was either the end of 2011 or the beginning of 2012. When did you move to LA? What year and what month?
Oh, I don't know. It was like January of 2012-ish.
Then that would mean we started the podcast in like the middle of 2011.
I thought we were going longer than that by the time that I left. So,
well, I mean,
might be off on that.
We were doing it for a while, and then you moved, and then we didn't do it with you for a bit, and then we tried doing it over Skype, and that didn't work, as it almost didn't work tonight. And yeah. And then we went out to LA to do it with you, and for a hot second, and yeah.
Okay, so you're just guessing at this point. So thanks.
Well, what I'm saying is we started in 2011, and we've been doing it
maybe
sort of on and off since then, because we've never been 100% consistent. This is the most consistent we've been, though, in the last year or so.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get started here. Hello.
That's a history
once
lesson.
Once again.
Sorry.
Yes, thanks. That was before the show started. We did a little history lesson here.
Yeah.
Hello, once again, Lucha Lushes. Is that right? This doesn't feel right on
that's
this episode.
You've been
saying.
You
know what it is.
That's
the. I know, but should I only do it for the top beer, or can it go for both? It can go for both. We're here, obviously, with another special edition of Get to Know the PWO PTBN. I think I switched that. Usually it's PTBN PWO. That's so we can have the kind of little rhymey thing. Get to Know PWO. I don't know if everybody's noticed that. And it is a very special Voices of Wrestling edition, as we have Drew. And I don't even know if Drew goes by a last name now that I think about it. I'm not the most prepared host here. Drew from Burning Spirits, new podcast over there covering the kind of lower level indies in Japan, not just New Japan, but some of the other companies that are a little bit smaller. Drew, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. Last name is Wardlaw, W-A-R-D-L-A-W.
I like that.
Yeah.
Strong name.
It's Scottish.
Mm.
Yeah. I do like it. I like Wardlaw. So, Drew, you are doing Burning Spirits, and as I said, that's you kind of are covering the smaller – I mean, not all smaller. I mean, I guess they're all technically smaller than New Japan at this point, but, I mean, you guys do DDT, Dragon Gate. They're both sizable, but I've also heard you talking about All Japan. I don't know if you get much smaller than that. What's the kind of – is – Indie Puro a passion for you, and how low level kind of indie are you guys planning on going? Are you going to stay at about the level of indies that you're covering right now?
Yeah, so the focus of the show is kind of anything that's not New Japan, Noah, or we don't really cover Dragon Gate. They do the Open the Voice Gate show on the VOW network, so and those guys are all like real experts, so we kind of stay away from those, and we just kind of fill in the gaps everywhere else. So the goal originally was just to cover anything that's got a big show or kind of newsworthy for that week. So it's ending up mostly, it looks like it's going to be mostly DDT, Big Japan, All Japan, kind of the second tier promotions. We did a show exclusively covering Heat Up, the promotion Heat Up. We reviewed their big show from 1031 a few weeks ago, and really we'll go as deep as the schedule allows. So we just kind of let whatever's big that week dictate what we cover. So, you know, like there is like that company Freedoms has a big show every year called Blood Christmas. So, I mean, I'd really like to cover that. Like Basara is having their first Korakuen show at the end of the month. I'd like to cover that too, you know, but there's a lot going on. So we like to stick to only one promotion per episode. So it'll really just kind of depend on what we're passionate about that week or what's getting a lot of talk or whatever. It's wrestling that I enjoy. I've enjoyed for a little bit now, and It's this year especially. I mean, it's easier than ever to watch this stuff, you know. So there's a lot more people, it feels like, getting interested in it. So it feels like a good time to just kind of get together and talk about stuff and hopefully attract new people to these companies.
Nice, nice. With kind of the upheaval just recently, first it was the announcement of DDT Universe, which had me wondering what was going to actually continue to come out on the YouTube channel. And then when the Grand Prix came out and it was kind of just an abridged random matches picked from the shows for DNA, and then now the announcement that it's a separate company, because I was reviewing DNA for Wrestling with Words. Or that was the plan. I think I maybe did one or two reviews. Is that a company? I know you guys didn't mention it. You mentioned Basara right now. But is DDT, do you think that's a promotion, especially now that it's kind of being pushed as its own thing? Is that something that would be on your guys' radar? Because I love me some DNA.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not too thrilled about the idea of them pushing it as like a separate brand. But I mean, we're going to cover it regardless. And we did want to do like a DDT or sorry, a DNA, like a Grand Prix show. And we just never got around to it. But we will definitely be covering that at some point.
Okay, cool, cool.
Yeah.
And so am I just terrible and I'm not familiar with your work with VOW before Burning Spirits, or is this kind of your first project with Voices of Wrestling?
Yeah, this is the first project. Okay. I haven't written anything or anything like that before Burning Spirits. So.
And do you have any kind of history in broadcasting? I mean, like we were talking before we started here, me and Adrian did podcasts before we did this one. Did you do anything else in audio or possibly even written as well before you were doing Burning Spirits?
No, not at all. The first episode we did was, I think, the second time the three of us had ever spoken. So, yeah, I mean, we're pretty new at this, but yeah, it's something that Kevin and I had kind of gone back and forth talking about doing for a while, and one day we were talking, and I just kind of brought up an idea and we just kind of went with it, and I got in touch with the VOW guys and they said, yeah, do a demo and let's see. So here we are.
Yeah. I mean, you guys definitely have an interesting feel. And so you obviously said, you know, as you've been doing the podcast, it's the first time that you guys are talking to each other, but I would assume you were friendly before the podcast started, correct?
Yeah. Kevin and I were friendly. We've known each other. I mean, we've been speaking to each other for a few years now, and it turns out we actually have a lot of mutual friends within music. So we talk like on Facebook on and off. Brennan, he was someone that I just emailed out of the blue because he's done or just this past year he's been doing a lot of articles for Voices of Wrestling, kind of covering like a lot of the like up and coming talent in Japan, a lot of the young guys. So he's done articles on, you know, Kazusada Higuchi and Kento Miyahara and Konosuke Takeshita, guys like that. So I thought, oh, you know, this seems like a guy who's kind of got a similar interest as us. So I'll just reach out to him, and he was really into it. So yeah, that's how we all met.
Yeah, very interesting. I definitely am into your guys' dynamic. I thought the first kind of, I don't even know if it was more than one episode, but I think it was the first few episodes, it kind of felt, and I think you guys even openly said it, were kind of primer setup episodes to be like, here's the background of these promotions, a little bit more than we'll cover later on, just to kind of give everybody a feel for what you're talking about if they're not familiar, and then getting into the reviews. And then I feel now that you've kind of got that footing and that base and you're strictly doing reviews, I told you before we started, I just listened to your review of the recent DDT Big Show, which I don't even remember the name of. I think it was Octopus something. Was that the one?
Osaka Octopus.
Osaka Octopus. That's the one. DDT always has these interesting names. I'm definitely liking the dynamic. I mean, as you said, you feel like you're getting better. And me and you talked off air about influences, and you don't have any history in broadcasting yourself, but you've definitely been influenced in radio and all that. So like, kind of who do you look at as an influence, especially in the fact that you're doing a podcast about Puro, so it's not like you were listening to over-the-air radio about, you know, Japanese wrestling to get the idea. So where kind of are you drawing those influences as you are the host of the show here?
I mean, honestly, as far as like hosting a wrestling podcast, I really, not to pander here, but I mean, really, like a lot of the PTBN shows and the VOW network shows are I listen to pretty much all of them, and so I kind of tried. That's kind of where I got the inspiration from, I guess. But then, you know, as we talked off air about, I'm a big AM radio guy, and have been for years and years and years. So, like, you mentioned Phil Hendry on the episode with Rod McCarron, and that's like, I mean, truly one of my favorite comedians of all time. I mean, I think that guy's like just an unbelievable genius. But, you know, like, I'm a big Coast to Coast fan too, and like, I used to listen to Love Line late at night. Any late night AM radio is really great, and I'm a big fan of all that stuff.
It's really interesting. I think I was kind of thinking about why myself as a young kid. I mean, I started when I was just insanely young. I mean, you're would still listen a young to. Kid, that's true, but I mean, middle school age, I would stay up late and listen to Coast and whatever kind of political talk. I remember listening to, like, you know, Hannity and Combs. What's his name? Combs had his own show that I would listen to late guys? At night. It wasn't Hannity and Combs. It was just Combs.
But you listened to
them. But then, that. Like, Tom Hartman. And, yeah, but, I mean, he's a liberal. So,
wow.
But I would also listen to Sean Hannity during the day at times, too, because it was just – it was talk radio.
This is,
you know,
middle
what I mean?
School?
It, that's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, middle school range.
In middle school, like, I was just watching, like, Late Night with Conan O'Brien. I wasn't listening to radio programs. That's crazy.
Well, that's what I'm wondering about Drew. I mean, Drew, did you find yourself doing the same thing? Obviously, I don't know how old you are, but...
how old are you, Drew?
I would assume that we're pretty close to the same age range.
So I am 32.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we are. So we did are. You find yourself listening to a lot of that stuff when you were at the same young age, or did you pick it up when you were older?
No, from a really young age, I would purposely fall asleep listening to AM talk radio. And then one of the jobs I had in high school, it was actually at a rifle manufacturer.
Okay.
And so we would just be having, it was me and this other guy alone in this building. We would replace, bolts, faulty bolts and safety, switches on bolt action rifles.
Wow.
Which is weird because I do not like guns at all, but you know, anyway, that's a different thing.
Where do you live?
So I live in Ventura, California.
Oh, okay.
Which is about 45 miles north of LA, but I grew up in a small town even north of here, on the central coast of California, called Atascadero, which is a very small rural town.
Never heard of that.
And it sounds like somewhere that Phil Hendry would say, like, Bobby Dooley lives in Atascadero.
Absolutely. Well, actually, Phil Hendry character, Herb Sewell.
Oh, yeah.
And Herb Sewell's friend, the never heard from but often referenced Walter Belhaven, was interned at the Atascadero State Hospital.
Oh, my God. You're so right. That's why it sounded so familiar.
So for those out of the loop, I know Phil Hendry. I know he had characters. What's special about this character you're referring to right now?
Walter Belhaven?
Yeah.
So he was. So there's a character that would avoid a voice character that he would do named Herb Sewell, who was a convicted child molester, who had been recently let free and is living in various places. Usually it's a halfway house, but he would always reference this friend of his, Walter Belhaven, who was a serial murderer who was interned at Atascadero State Hospital.
And that part is true, or that part is part of the...
That's part of the
lore.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I was... Because I know, like, Tim, you're a big Phil Hendry fan, and I knew he had all these... I didn't think he would have a character that's a pedophile, though. It's kind of...
Oh, yeah. His stuff was super risque. Like, that was the whole point, was just he pushed the limits. If I remember correctly, Herb Sewell was a child molester, pedophile kind of character, but he was also like a scientific genius. No, like he would.
Yeah, that was part of his character too. he was an academic.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was like this. He would always be talking about really important works that he's doing for society, but then also making reference to the fact that he had been incarcerated for touching children. Yeah. So,
that's honestly amazing to think about that he did that. Like that's like. He sounds like he's a true artist to have all this depth to these all these characters he did. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that's why people who are Phil Henry fans really appreciate just how awesome he is because the stuff he would do and me and Drew talked about it. His podcast now he doesn't get to kind of mess with society because he's not over the terrestrial airwaves. He's not getting calls from random people listening to him on the radio, and that was. Honestly, where he really shined is being subversive to the public. It's just kind of not there anymore.
It took me a while to know that he did. Honestly, I used to listen to his show when I was in college on the radio, and at first I had no fucking clue that these were real. That these were not. That these voices were all him. I thought these were actual people, and I always found it so strange. I was like, why the hell is he talking to these weirdos? Like, I don't get it. Like, and then I realized that oh shit, he's doing that's his whole thing. He does these characters and. He's so good at it that someone like me just didn't realize it at first, you know?
Yeah, so. Well, and plus there's no precedent for what he did, so it's like that wouldn't even come into your mind. Like at most, it would be like, oh, well, this guy he has like his friends call and make stuff up, but the idea that he's sitting there on the phone in his own studio talking to himself as different characters is like it's totally unprecedented.
He had like a lady that was like it was like a black woman, like an older black woman, and I was like, why is this black woman always on his show? Like I don't get it.
Oh.
Like,
right, yeah, Mavis Leonard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so she has a name. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
And is she God, I feel like we're getting bad because we're just talking about this his radio show, but
I know I'm sorry. Robert, I don't want us to go off on a tangent, but this stuff is really fascinating to me.
Yeah, but that's the Robert's aunt, or is it his aunt or his mom? I don't something like
right,
that.
Right? Yeah,
it's, Leonard is.
It's Robert's. Is it his grandma or is it his great aunt?
Yeah, it's one of those. But yeah. So he has a guy who plays like essentially what's supposed to be maybe a board op or something like that. But he's, obviously sounds like a heavy set black man, and that's supposed to be his aunt is the Mavis Leonard, who's kind of. I wouldn't say conservative, but she's definitely old school in her way of looking at the world and her politics, and she calls in all the time, and it's a really weird dynamic. Again, this stuff just gets so deep and so just insane, so it's just kind of something else. But Drew, I mean, do you feel – this was the thing. I was thinking about it the other day before even you messaged me and we got kind of hit it off talking about radio stuff. I was thinking about did my kind of fixation on talk radio, as I said, like any port in a storm, I would listen to political talk radio when I was a young kid. Did it, number one, like inform my opinions on politics now to like the reason why I think the way I do? And did it like inform the reason why I care about politics? Do you see that in yourself? And we don't have to get into specifics about how much you care about politics, which way you lean, any of that stuff. But just like, do you think that caring about talk radio actually kind of influenced how much you care about politics?
I don't think so. I mean, so like I was saying, I worked at a rifle manufacturer, and so we would listen to, it was like Mark and Brian in the morning. Then we would switch and listen to Tim Rome. What's his Tim Rome? Jim Rome. The sports guy, Jim Rome, and then it would be hours and hours of the Bill O'Reilly radio show.
I remember Mark and Brian. Those guys are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. As far as like morning zoo type guys.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, it didn't – so I've kind of – and so I grew up like kind of from a pretty young age, being pretty involved in like punk music, you know. So with that, there's like a political message or there's politics that you're exposed to through that. So I was kind of exposed to like very, very extreme forms of politics. One side, the punk side, and the other side, the Bill O'Reilly side. And I don't think it really had any effect on me. I'm not a very political person now, but it's just, I mean, as you said, Tim. It's like, it's just interesting to hear people talk, and it's enjoyable just to hear people talk on the radio. I don't care what they're talking about, yeah. You know?
Yeah, no.
I don't know if Bill O'Reilly did radio. Sorry. I don't know if Bill O'Reilly did radio, by the way.
Yeah, I think it was even before his show was on.
Oh, okay.
Was on TV.
I know Rush Limbaugh's been around forever, but I don't know Bill
O'Reilly. Yeah, sure, yeah.
A lot of the political pundits that kind of made their way over to the 24-hour news channels like MSNBC, Fox News, whatever the CNN one is, I can't remember right now, but a lot of them started out on radio. So, like, I know Rachel Maddow was on radio, I forget his last name, but he was on radio. What's his name? Sean Hannity was on radio, and the crazy one with the white hair. I can't remember his name. Glenn Beck, he was on radio to begin with. So yeah, like most of those talking heads on the TV started out on the radio. They pick out the ones that you can make them camera ready and they put them on television.
Well, right. That explains why they're all ugly. So I don't know if they're necessarily camera ready.
Well, they're the best looking radio people, Adrian.
That doesn't bode well for the radio industry. If they're the best looking ones, my God.
Yeah. So I guess we should take a quick break.
Yes.
Okay.
Listen to some plugs for some other shows on the obviously Drew-endorsed PTBN network. And then we'll come back and we'll get into this music stuff because I think that might be interesting, especially because I was definitely involved in the punk scene myself when I was younger.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following...
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Now, Drew, you talked about being in music, being in bands, being involved in punk rock. So before we even get into that too much, I got to ask you, because it can go both ways. Are you like straight edge punk? Do you drink? Do you not drink? Do you do anything? I mean, I know you're probably settled down and married, but where do you fall on that kind of wagon?
Yeah, so I'm straight edge.
Okay.
And have been for like 18 years now, I think, something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I keep thinking I should start drinking or something to take the stress out of my job. But you know.
I don't recommend it for that. Like, honestly, I mean, obviously, we do a beer podcast as well, and so we like drinking. But like, I can't speak 100% for Adrian, but I know that for me, I drink beer because I enjoy it, just because I enjoy the way it tastes. And for me, it's not a, it's not really about getting a buzz. Getting a buzz can be nice, but it's not like a stress reducer. Like, I really wouldn't recommend starting to drink to try to fix problems of any kind as a hobby.
Oh, I'm sure about that.
That's not a good idea.
Because it works for some people, Tim.
That's true. I've never met. I mean, it depends on what the problem is. There are some problems that can be solved by ingesting large quantities of alcohol. But I'm not going to get into specifics here because I don't want to bum everybody out.
But it, it is a good way to unwind. You have to at least admit that, no?
Yeah.
I mean,
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, I'll let the 18-year straight-edge guy explain how drinking is good for unwinding.
just what I was going to say is, you know, honestly, I don't think I could I don't think I would have any control if I drank. Like, I think I'd just start drinking at work and, like, you know, while I'm driving and anything. I don't think I would have any control over myself, honestly. So, well, I think it's better to just abstain.
100%. Well, yeah, and honestly, Adrian, for me, I mean, you know, I'm kind of a weird dude, so I wake up wide awake, and as soon as I get. Yeah, I wake up wide awake, and when I go to bed, I can be on my phone and then passed out within, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. So I don't really have an unwind. I don't have a wind up, and I don't have an unwind. Yeah. So that's not.
That's true, that's because I can't even imagine you sleeping. I can't visualize what it must be to see you sleeping. You know, I assume you don't sleep, honestly. I assume you're awake 24/7 because I text you sometimes, like, when I'm awake, like at 3 in the morning, and I look at my text when I wake up. I'm like, he responded at 6 a.m. Like, what the fuck was he doing? You know, so
I'm always at 6 a.m. That's normal for me. But but Drew, okay, so straight edge. Did you get into straight edge from punk rock, or were you straight edge and that led you into punk rock? I mean, that seems like that's not likely. But which way did it kind of go in that regard?
From like punk and hardcore music. Like I had. A friend's older brother. That's kind of how I got into punk music. Actually, it was all older brothers. Like, all the different music stuff I've been involved in, and it all came from someone's older brother. But a friend of mine's older brother made me a tape of a band called Youth of Today, who's a youth crew band in the late '80s. So that really spoke to me. You know, like, I was in seventh grade, I think, and I had been into, like, music and real aggressive music for a long time before that, but that kind of spoke to me in a different way, and it was, like, a whole new, like, type of energy and aggression, and, yeah, it was cool.
So, well, I'm actually not familiar. You said, what was the name of the band?
Youth of Today?
Today, okay. And yeah. So were they a straight-edge band? Were they political in any way, or was it kind of just straight up, just fast paced, aggressive, angry music?
Yeah, well, like, it was the genre is called youth crew, so that kind of grew out of the New York scene, and the focus was it was kind of cool because it was real aggressive and fast and everything, but generally with the youth crew bands, there was a focus on like clean living and vegetarianism and like positive mentalities and stuff. So kind of taking like the Bad Brains, like PMA, to a whole different level. You know what I mean? So
yeah, no, definitely. I don't know how I'm not familiar with youth crew music. It sounds like something I should know, and I may even know bands from it, but just never thought of it as that name because it sounds like it's what, like hardcore and some of this, like, just like straight edge hardcore from New York.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. So, okay. Like, yeah, Bold and Youth of Today and Gorilla Biscuits and Straight Ahead, all those bands.
Okay, so that actually makes sense. I think out of that, I mean, I've heard Bold, but I'm more familiar with Gorilla Biscuits. So
right, yeah.
And so then you got into music from that, like, as I'm assuming you're a musician. You talked about being in bands. I'm gonna assume you play some kind of instrument, possibly sing. I don't know, but was it from, hey, this music sounds like something I can do, or were you already into playing music before that?
Well, I was already into music. I got into music. I was in like second grade, I think, and I was a big fan of Headbangers Ball. I kind of, my friend, a different friend's older brother, you know, their family was like super, super into music and, you know, like a bunch of classic rock and stuff that the guy's dad would have. And then my friend's brother, he was into like death metal and stuff. So, you know, he showed me like Morbid Angel Covenant when it came out in 1993 and like, you know, Cannibal Corpse and Suffocation and stuff like that. Like, so I don't know. I was always attracted to like real aggressive music. So yeah, I mean, starting from a young age, like I said, like I'd sleep over at my friend's house cause we didn't have MTV. But I'd sleep over at my friend's house and we'd watch Headbangers Ball. And then like, I'd get tapes of all the videos and stuff that were on Headbangers Ball. So yeah, that's kind of where music started for me. And then it just kind of led eventually to punk, I guess.
And so did you play, do you play instrument? I mean, what do you play?
Yeah. So, I used to sing in a hardcore band, and I play guitar and bass. I really barely play guitar. I've never even played guitar in a band, but, I've been playing a lot of bass for the past several years. I was studying with a jazz guy for the past year or so. So, yeah, that's kind of a big part of my life, and that's a lot of fun. Yeah, and I don't really play hard music too much right now, but I'm playing around with other guys, kind of more experimental music now. So yeah.
And I mean, you obviously to me come across as a even-tempered kind of guy, but you're into the aggressive music, and I think if you've If you happen to listen back, or anybody else who happened to listen back here, Dylan Hales talking about being kind of the front man for punk bands before and being the boisterous one, while the guys who actually played the instruments were kind of the, you know, in the back quiet and more focused on their music. Do you think you were more that person, or am I completely reading you wrong? And when it comes to performing, you're kind of out in front and kind of love all the attention.
Well, these days, really, I mean, this is part of why I like the bass as an instrument so much, is it's actually a very complex instrument, and it's really rhythmic. And so I and you're allowed to just kind of sink in the background and kind of lock in with the drums and just sit there, and you don't have to be out in front or anything. So I enjoy that. I was, when I sang for a band, I was very aggressive. It ended up really getting us in trouble. And I mean, I don't know how long we have for story time, but I could go into a lot if
if you'd like.
Well, how did
it get you in
trouble
specifically? I'm curious. Yeah. I'm really curious about that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, okay. So the very first show I played with this band, it was someone's birthday party, and it was in it was on a farm in Arroyo Grande, California, and so we showed up and we set everything up, and we started playing, and we instantly should I start there? Yeah. Okay. Sorry. So, I had a lot of, you know, music, especially like aggressive music, and singing was always a really, really big emotional release. So, I guess during that period of time, you know, I just had a lot of negative emotions, but, so we started playing and we immediately, just started breaking, everything, all our instruments and everything. And there was, some glass on the ground. So I, got the glass. I started cutting myself. You know, pretty heavily. Like, I've got, my chest is like a mess right now. I mean, and has been for, you know, 10 or 12 years. Like, there's a bunch of scars, but, anyway, so I was bleeding everywhere. It was raining outside. We broke all of our instruments and just left them there. And we got paid a little bit of money. I took all the money, and went to the Chumash Indian Casino, and I was with a friend of mine, and the friend, he had pepper spray on him in his bag. I had, I was really, someone had given me a butterfly knife from a trip to Mexico. So I had a butterfly knife on me. And we went to gamble and I was like a mess. I was still bleeding from the chest and I was soaking wet. And I sat down and I mean, they were actually, that didn't really get us into too much trouble because they just checked our bags and they, you know, confiscated the knives and pepper spray that we had. But I got escorted out of the casino eventually because I was sitting at the blackjack table. I was covered in blood. I was wearing a white shirt, so like my shirt was covered in blood. I was soaking wet, and I was losing all my money. Like I spent the, you know, whatever $50 that we got, and then I was just going to the ATM, and I lost like hundreds of dollars that day.
Wow.
And the dealer was like, "Hey man, are you okay?" You know, because I was just sitting there losing. I was like, "Yeah, I'm fine." So eventually, security came and escorted me out, but yeah.
I thought you were going to say that your friend took the pepper spray and sprayed your open wounds with it in the middle of the casino floor, and then the pit boss just came and kicked you guys out. That's where I thought the story was going. That's amazing.
Right. Well, it's nothing that bad, luckily. But I mean, so it was like, I mean, honestly, every show we played, we tried to do a full U.S. tour with that band. I mean, every show was a disaster. We were all really, really mad at each other the whole tour. So, at one point, we were in Kansas City and the guitarist, we started playing the first song and I just went up to the guitar and I just, grabbed all the tuning pegs and just turned them and just detuned his guitar and, you know, threw him all out of tune. And so he just took off his guitar and it just started hitting me with it until it broke.
Jesus.
And then eventually we had to cancel the rest of the tour. Because I got at one show, we had a bottle of bleach with us for laundry, you know, to do laundry with. And the guitarist, we were in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And it was a really, really hot, it was in August, like early August in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And the room we were playing in had no ventilation. And so he just took the bucket of the bottle of bleach and dumped it over me while we were playing. And I got like chemical burns all over my body.
Jeez.
And we had to just cancel the rest of the tour. But I mean, it was a mess. That whole tour was a mess. It was just, like I said, we hated each other. We hated ourselves. I was throwing cinder blocks at the drummer, like trying to break his drums with cinder blocks and just all kinds of stuff. It was a mess.
How old were you, by the way?
Early 20s. So I think that was 2007.
Wow.
So yeah, early 20s, 23.
You were wild back then, huh?
Ooh, real wild.
And, I mean, were you straight edge at that? I mean, you would have been straight edge at that time as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're doing all of that stuff sober.
Sober. Yep. Dead sober.
Do you see? So I was a little bit wild when I was younger. Probably not close to where you were at. And then just kind of feel like I got it all out of my system. Do you think maybe you're in the same boat? Do you feel like you kind of got it out of your system young and now you can kind of just be a normal person?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
you probably wouldn't be on this podcast talking to me if you were still that same kid, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't think I would be. But yeah, I mean, I think like graduating college, getting a job, getting married, those are all pretty positive things, you know? So I needed positive things in my life. And that was something that really helped me. The thing is, though, the band kept... we kept playing. I mean, that's kind of why we ended up stopping is because eventually we were just joking around on stage. So it kind of lost it. It lost the edge, I guess. But it was a good band. I liked that band. I haven't listened to any of the music in a long time, but
I don't know if you want to put it out there for people if they want to go check it out. I mean, what's the name of the band?
Sure. It's called Dry Rot.
Okay.
Yeah, so
I like that name.
And you can search for it somewhere, possibly you can find it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we have a bunch of records out, and they should be pretty cheap to get at this point. So
yeah. All right. Well, I mean, what was it? I mean, as I said, I mean, I was into punk. I did stupid stuff when I was younger, self mutilation, all that stuff, and all that. And I've kind of, you know, thought about it, and not necessarily really openly talked about it too much, but I mean, do you think it was, you know, oh, I hurt so much inside that I want to feel something other than just like mental anguish? Or, as you said, you all kind of hated each other and hated yourselves. I mean, what would cause you to do kind of act out in that way? I understand, you know, the adrenaline of performing can kind of make you lash out, but have you really kind of thought about it and broken it down psychologically as to what would cause you to act that way?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of two things. I think it was, like I said, a lot of negative emotions and negative feelings that we in the band all had towards each other and towards ourselves. And I think all of us were going through various hardships at the time. So that's a definite aspect to it. The other thing, I think we really felt a need to, if we were going to be playing aggressive music, we were going to represent that, and we were going to play music that was very, very honest and real. And the music that we were playing was very, very aggressive and very, very negative. And that's how we felt, and that's what we wanted to show people, you know, in our songs and on stage and everything. And there's definitely
I was going to let you go. I'm sorry. I was interrupting you. Finish what you're saying.
There's definitely a level of antagonism to it, of course. But it was never something where we were going out of our way to hurt other people. It was always directed at ourselves. So I think that was really... that was a reflection of just where we were all mentally at the time, which was, you know, not the best places to varying degrees for each of us.
Do you think in some ways, because you even said it there, it was about kind of being authentic. Do you think in some ways you were able to disassociate and act like you're playing a character for the band, and that's why you're doing these things that you may or may not have consciously or subconsciously wanted to do anyways, but, you know, a normal person would stop themselves, but you, because you're on stage and you're playing this character in the band, you're allowed to do it. Do you think that could possibly be part of it?
Yes. I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy at a certain point. Like, it's, you know, you have these feelings, so you start writing this music and you start playing this music, and then you want to represent that on stage. And so you start acting like that on stage. And then eventually, if you're not careful, and really what started happening to me, all the band, but me specifically, and anyone, you know, that I'm friends with, or was friends with back then will tell you that, you start playing into like the character that you've got on stage, you know? So eventually, no matter how real those feelings were, there is that element of performance, you know? But then that starts carrying over, like, oh, you know, people start responding to that and like, oh yeah, dude, this guy is like real dark. He's real heavy, you know, whatever. And so you start feeding into that, and you start letting that affect your life outside the band. And I mean, that was a really big thing. And actually, after that tour, that was 2007, and we stopped playing for almost 2 years after that, for that reason. And I mean, during that time, a lot of things were happening. And like I said, I kind of started just playing into that character and letting that bleed over into my real life. And really, it's like I really alienated a lot of people and lost some friends over it, you know?
No, yeah, of course. I mean, that's just what kind of happens. And I almost, as we talked about, you know, earlier, starting picking up drinking or something like that. And it just, it feels like, as you talked about, sitting there gambling away all your money and having kind of a compulsory kind of way of life, it, even though you were straight edge and you weren't doing drugs, in some ways, as you said, you're alienating friends and, or, you know, friends and other people and things like this. It's almost in a weird way, like the way addiction works. I almost find that a lot of times people who are, you know, vehemently straight edge, you know, like yourself, or people who just become addicts, have that same kind of addictive personality. Where you're almost like addicted to other things. You may not be addicted to substances, but you're addicted to other things. And you seem like a guy who really throws himself into stuff, obviously, and is really into things. So it's probably for the best that you don't kind of pick up any substances, because you probably will just kind of compulsively. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it to the max. It seems like you're that kind of guy. So is that fair to say? I mean,
I mean, absolutely. Like, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Finish what you're saying. This is your show.
Oh, my show.
Well, you know, you're the guest. You're the reason people are listening.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, that's like I said earlier. I said, you know, I don't think I could control myself. I think it would be great to be able to, like, you know, pair wine and cheese or whatever, but I couldn't do it. You know, I think have that personality, so. Yeah, I think it's probably for the best that I just stay away. But I mean, yeah, like look how self-destructive I was being back then. And like, okay, I was doing it sober, but at what point is it just arbitrary that, oh yeah, I'm staying away from alcohol, but I'm, you know, doing whatever else.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of my point. It's like it mirrors, and I think that society puts a premium on certain things that are just like, what's the difference? It's like, if you're behaving like an addict, if you have, I'm not putting this on you, but
if you have
like a mental health issue of some kind that's underlying, that's, you know, it may or may not be chronic or something that lasts a long time, but it could be something that just at the moment you're having, obviously it sounds like it. I mean, you don't kind of do stuff like that to yourself if you're not having some kind of mental health issues.
Yeah, sure. It's, right.
But people go like, oh, you know, but he's clean, he's not doing drugs, so he's fine. And they'll let you go ahead and just be self-destructive. And meanwhile, you know, stigmatize someone else who's in the streets and drinking to kind of help them sleep because they hear voices or see things. And it is very interesting to think about. The other side of it, though, I wanted to ask, like, other hobbies. Do you find that you throw yourself now into other hobbies and other things just as passionately, maybe stuff that's just a little bit less self-destructive?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I do have a little bit of that addictive personality. I think, and my wife, actually, when I was talking to her about, oh, you know, I think I'm going to be doing this podcast, you know, how do you, is that okay? And she said, yeah, I mean, it seems like you really get into stuff really, really deep. So I don't know. I mean, just kind of be careful and don't let it take up too much time. But like,
I like that though.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, I do that with wrestling. I do that with like running. I do that with, you know, from periods periodically with bass playing. I did it with like ping pong for a while, you know, all kinds of stuff. So
nice. Did you get yourself into any competitive ping pong, or were you just playing for fun?
I competed in like our we've got something called the corporate games. I work for the county, and so the corporate games, we compete with a bunch of corporations from around Ventura County. So that was the only tournament I ever did. I got fourth place though.
Nice.
I lost to someone that looked like Ricky Fuji, the
who's that?
The wrestler.
Oh,
he's a grimy old Japanese wrestler.
He kind of looks like what is that guy's name from the movie The Wrestler? And he was he was in the Iron Man movies.
Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke. He kind of looks like Mickey Rourke somewhere in between the character in the Iron Man movie and in The Wrestler. He's like, right. Not quite one or
I never saw The Wrestler. I heard that was a really good movie.
It was.
Ernest the Cat is in it.
Who? Yeah, and so is the Necro Butcher.
Yeah.
So definitely give that one a shot. Darren Aronofsky's great. Drew, we had so much stuff I wanted to talk to you about, honestly, and this seems to be a running theme with all the podcasts we just kind of want to talk. So, Adrian, I don't know if you had any other things you wanted to get into real quick before we take our last break and come back with the old final question.
I did, and really quick, because we've had a lot of wrestling journalists on the show, obviously, and when I think about you guys saying how you cover wrestling and stuff, I always like to visualize you guys out there at a show with, like, a pen and pad writing stuff down. Like, do you actually do that, or do you just kind of watch it and then you talk about it or write about it, or how does it work? Like, how do you actually, I'm always curious about the process. Like, how do you cover wrestling when you either watch a show or when you physically go to an actual wrestling show?
I don't like going to live shows. I don't know, it just being around the people in the small buildings, it just makes me uncomfortable for some reason. So I don't really do that. But everything I cover is Japanese. So I just sit with my laptop and take notes.
Gotcha.
While I'm watching the match. So yeah,
And you take notes, and then when you write about it, like, do you just, like, what's your, really quick, like, what's your process like? Do you, like, look over all your notes, and then you just kind of pick out the best parts, the most interesting parts to you? Like, what's kind of your process for that?
Yeah, so what I try to do is I try to, like, hit all the different beats of the match. So, you know, I'll just kind of take notes on, each section of the match, what moves they're doing, all that. And then at the end of that, kind of write down my overall thoughts on the match. And then kind of I try to compress that into something that's not too tedious when we talk about it.
Okay. That reminds me of when on the old format of this show, when I would watch Lucha Underground, I would take notes on the whole episode, and I would write stuff like, guy flips over the other guy with his arms, throws him on the ground, and then I would tell Tim about that, and Tim's like, wait, which move is that? Oh, it's that. Oh, it has a name. Gotcha. No, that's cool. I was just curious. Yeah, I was just curious about what your process is like. So,
all right. Well, we'll take one more quick break, and then we'll come back with the final question.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, so we're back, and Tim, I think you know what time it is, Tim. I think you know it's time for the final question.
Yes, it is. It's time for the final question. Now, Drew, as I think, not necessarily the first person who's been on the show who's listened to the show, but I would say the first kind of confirmed. No, that's not true. I guess Hugh was just on a little while ago and he listens to the show. But you knew this was coming, so I hope you're prepared here. So, Drew, if someone only knows you from the podcast, obviously they may not know you from the music and the bands. You didn't write anything for Voices of Wrestling. They don't know you personally. What would be something that they'd find out about you that was shocking, other than all the things that we've already talked about?
Let's see. You know, I think something that I actually tell very few people, I think just because I forget about it, but I had my first job. My parents made me get a job when I was 9 years old.
Jesus.
And I lived in Atascadero, California, which is about 20 minutes north of San Luis Obispo, California. And they made me get a job at a hamburger restaurant in San Luis Obispo. So what I would have to do is I would have to walk from my house to the bus stop, which is about 2 miles away. And I'd have to get on the bus and go to San Luis Obispo, which took about an hour and a half one way. Then I'd have to work and then ride the bus home.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What job were you? No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Wow. No, I don't know why my parents made me do that, but they did.
I mean, a 2.5-mile walk, how long did that take you? I feel like that would take you like almost an hour.
It took like, so it was two miles. So yeah, like 40 minutes or so.
And then you had to get on the bus for another hour and a half to get to work. And then that's like a 2-hour commute each way. That's 4 hours out of your day. I mean, you might as well be living in LA at that point, right?
Right. Yeah.
Jeez.
And what job are you doing at night?
I would bus tables. Okay. And I would get paid. I would work only on Wednesdays from 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock, and I'd get paid $15 and free lunch.
And you were 9 years old?
9 years old.
There's, wow. And you don't have any understanding of why this was happening?
No, I have none. But, well, because my mom worked across the street from that restaurant, and so she knew the owner, and so she got me the job, but she never explained why I had to have it.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, because I mean, what did you? Go ahead.
She wouldn't. She made me take the bus. She wouldn't give me a ride.
So many questions.
Wait, I didn't think about that. She worked across the street, and you had to take the bus.
Yeah.
So were you going to school, or was this during the summer?
No, it was during the summer.
Oh, okay.
So it's during the summer, and then the other days, what would you? You just wouldn't do it. You just right. Like hang out.
Yeah. I'd just be at home. But
one day a week.
Well, you know, yeah. $15 a day adjusted for inflation. That's what? $15 a day.
Yeah, probably still 15. I mean, inflation hasn't been that bad since the recession and all that. Yeah. What the? So she would go into work. What time did she go to work?
So she would go to work. I think she would be there. She would get there at like 8 in the morning.
Okay, and you were supposed to be to work at 11, but it took you like 4 hours to get there. So you're leaving 7 or 8 anyways.
Yeah. So she would get there, or she would leave about a half an hour before I would start walking. But she wanted me. I guess she wanted me to learn how to navigate public transportation. But I was 9.
You're 9 years old.
Because you know, Central Coast California is not public transportation. So that was going to be how you were going to get from place to place. You
they
gonna...
call it the Manhattan of the West Coast.
it's really true. this whole thing, and so you. Bus tables for, said 11
that,
to 2.
That's why you were so angry later on, because of all this commuting you had to do. You know what I mean? Yeah, so no, you learned to become an adult early, if you think about it, because at 9 years old, you were already getting pissed off at all the commuting you had to do.
Yeah, so it was just pent-up aggression from working for a living.
How did you like that job, by the way? Honestly, like what do you remember about it?
I actually loved it. It was a place called Frank's Hot Dogs, and they had really, really good burgers and chili cheese fries and really good chocolate shakes.
But the hot dogs were terrible.
Yeah, you know, I never tried the hot dogs. I don't know why. I love hot dogs, but it was just those burgers. I was so into the burgers, I never bothered. But I liked the job. Like it was, I would just run around and bus tables. It was just everything else. It was 3 hours that was fine, but it was an obligation when I was a child, and then the commute was like 4 hours. So
that's crazy. Bussing tables just means like you're picking up and you're picking up glasses and plates and stuff, right? And then taking them to the back that's what it is, right? You're not serving. You're just clearing stuff off the tables.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I'd take people their food, but it wasn't like a sit down waiter restaurant. It was, you order and then I bring the food out to you and then I wipe the table down and take the food away, stuff like that.
Something a 9-year-old could handle, right? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, theoretically.
mean, right.
That's why this is my favorite part of the show, because we always get to learn these weird stories about people's lives. And that really is an interesting, weird thing to know about you in a good way, obviously. So yeah, thank you for that. I mean,
yeah,
that
you're
was
welcome.
This is fantastic. You just, Drew, you've really been the guest that keeps on giving tonight. Just okay. everything. Very, really appreciate this. And as I said, I had other stuff I'd love to get into with you, but we just don't have the time. I think we're already in extra innings as it is. So obviously we talked about it. It's the whole big thing, Burning Spirits over there on Voices of Wrestling. Anything particular you want to plug, though?
You can follow us on Twitter at _BurningSpirits. And yeah, that's all. I mean, check out the show. We have a lot of fun doing it. We want to get more people into this stuff. So I think we give a pretty good introduction and kind of a jumping off point. But check us out. Thanks a lot, guys, for letting me come on. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Adrian, you got anything particular you need to plug this week?
Obviously, follow us on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Follow me at Della Boots. Check out our latest Top Beer episode, which I'm very proud of. I got to visit a brewery a few weeks back, and I got to put that together and put it out there. And I'm really excited about people listening to that. And that's pretty much it, Tim. What about you?
Yeah, that was literally just what I was going to say. I was going to say, if I know that there are some people who only listen to the interview episodes because they don't like beer, they don't care about beer, they're straight edge like Drew here. but this last episode with Adrian going to the, what was it, the Berthoud Brewing Company. I mean, it was, you know, we were talking earlier about talk radio. This was NPR level stuff about a brewery tour. It was slickly produced. Great stuff. I think even if you're not interested in beer, you can definitely be interested in just kind of hearing about something. So I'd definitely go, you know, pick that one up. Go listen to it. Otherwise, let's see. Wrestling with Words. The biggest thing Wrestling with Words, honestly, right now to me is that Isaac, who was, I don't know if he's been a guest on Burning Spirits, but I know that Brennan was a guest on his show, Pure on the Rough. His kind of ebook or book just came out, so I'd recommend everyone go over to Wrestling with Words, check that out, and you know, throw him a couple bucks for his hard work. The young kid's trying to put everything together. It's a really interesting read. I haven't got a chance to finish it yet, obviously, because it just came out today as we're recording this, but he's just such a great writer, such an interesting young kid, so I definitely say go check that one out. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, I guess it's the biggest thing after the number one biggest thing, which is, Adrian, as you know, and as everyone else who's listening here knows, the three B's, which are good beers, good buds, and good banter. Good night.